Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. It's Tuesday morning. Joining me from New Orleans, Louisiana, at the Pelicans practice facility, I believe, is Mr. Andrew Lopez.
That is 100% correct. Happy New Year to you, Brian.
504
what's
boy.
What's the threshold on how long you have to say Happy New Year? It's January 3rd. I mean, we're still in it, but when do we stop saying that?
I'm just going to go with the first. For us, it's easy down here because on January 6th, we go to a brand new season, which is Mardi Gras. So if up until 12th night, up until January 6th, you can say it, because after that, it's Mardi Gras and nothing matters anymore.
Join us from Oakland, California, and a guy who may have attended. I don't want to assume Anscapes, Mark J. Spears. You're a Louisiana guy. Have you been a big Mardi Gras guy in your career?
You know, my mother's from New Orleans. I was mostly there during my youth in the summer. So I didn't get to go to Mardi Gras until I was an adult. And that's just because, you know, it's February. And obviously covering the NBA, February is a really busy time of year. So I think it took like me to be at a Pelicans game and to finally go. But shout out to Jen Hale, the Pelican sideline reporter. When I was there, she had it laid out at some steakhouse on what's the main street where the Mardi Gras takes place?
On St. Charles.
Yes, on St. Charles. And I don't know who she knows, but it was like, yeah, what steak you want? What wine you want? What daiquiri you want? By the way, the parade's going on. She had it hooked up. And my cousin, shout out to English Muffin, as we call her. She's having a big parade party in front of her house on St. Charles where everybody is welcome. So if you go to her Instagram page, English Muffin. English Muffin Monet. She calls herself English Muffin. She's having a... I guess it's a public party, which is incredible to me.
But I hope so now.
Yeah. Well, I don't know English Muffin. I don't know English Muffin, but I do know Jen Hale, and she is the best. Right now, in addition to being the Pelicans sideline reporter, she has to be the referee between Skip and Shannon on another network. And
if Shannon don't show up, there's no refereeing to be done.
We will talk about another network, but
yeah you are fine.
Much props to Jen Hale, also does NFL sideline.
Legend.
one of the best. And she does a lot of great things off the court too. Yes. So anyway, we'll talk about what happened in New Orleans last night, where we almost had one of the great epic games of the season, almost. Because I think if Zion doesn't get hurt, Embiid and Zion are trading baskets and they're both sniffing 50, we will have to settle for what else happened on Monday night. And I know that this will be 2 days old by the time this podcast comes out. But I think when you have a 70-point game, something the highest scoring game in almost 17 years in the NBA, Donovan Mitchell puts up, I think that merits discussion. DeMar DeRozan, by the way, who made like four really clutch baskets in the fourth quarter to keep the Bulls ahead and ended up not working out. He had 42, and it is like less than an all-star ran in that performance. Donovan goes for 71 points. And just to be the way that I saw it, he had probably the best second half of his career, at least in a regular season game. You know, I didn't see every Jazz game. Maybe somebody in the Jazz fan could dispute that. Maybe Donovan would dispute it. But he probably had the best second half of his career. He had like 40 in the second half, or just in the third and fourth quarters. And then because by the way, Darius Garland was out of this game. And so was Evan Mobley, and the Bulls were regularly double teaming him. And he had 17 or so in the first half, but he didn't have a great half. And the Cavs were down 18 points and he was frustrated. He got teed up like right in the last minute of the first half because, you know, he was angry about a call, but he was really angry about the situation. So he has the best second half arguably of his regular season career before the overtime, makes probably a once in career play with 3 seconds left when he purposely misses a free throw, gets the rebound and puts it back in. I will
box out.
Yeah. Patrick. Well, first off, Billy Donovan was angry after the game that he thought Donovan Mitchell should have been called for a lane violation because he shot a real high arcing shot and it looked like he did leave early. Yes. And earlier in the quarter, Alex Caruso was called for back-to-back lane violations on Donovan Mitchell free throws. And Donovan missed both of those free throws and he was able to get a make. And I think that contributed and it was a lane violation where he stepped inside the 3-point line. Caruso was like at the 3-point line.
Right.
And they put his foot in twice in a row. So, I mean, it was a lane violation, but it's not something you normally see get called. It got called twice in a row. And then when the game on the line, Billy is furious. And then Patrick Williams was supposed to block Donovan out. He didn't. And Billy was like, yeah, because Donovan had a head start, but he still should have blocked him out. Anyway, I will argue, and I will let you guys dispute this with me if you want. I will argue that the Donovan rebound and put back was more technically impressive than the Luka one, because the Luka one was partially or largely a product of luck. It passed through 3 Knick players' hands before it fell into his. He made a brilliant play when he caught it and put it back up, and there was less time on the clock. So I'm not trying to say the play, but Donovan actually beat everybody to the spot, got his own rebound cleanly and put it back up. Maybe not artistically better, but technically better. That is probably a once in your career play. So he has the best second half, I will argue, of his regular season career, a once in a career play to force the overtime with 3 seconds left, and then has the best overtime of his career where he scores 13 points in 5 minutes. Both teams were completely gassed, flat on their heels, could barely run. And Donovan is beating everybody up and down the court to the ball, despite playing 50 minutes in the second and not coming out in the second half. He just had more energy and stamina than anybody. And so I will say right in a row, before I pass the ball to you, Spears, best second half, one of the best individual plays he'll ever have, best overtime, boom, 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 all in a row, iconic performance. When he retires, it may say Donovan Mitchell, who won an MVP and won a title and all these things, but it will say he had a 71-point game. Just like Kobe, MVP, 5 titles, and the 81-point game. People will never forget that singular performance. So no matter what happens, he will always have this.
You pass me the ball, but I'm going to throw it right back to you because I consider you a Cavs historian, right?
Yeah.
The same way people, you know, try to consider me a Warriors historian, right? I consider you a Cavs historian. So, excluding postseason, is this the greatest individual performance in Cavaliers history?
Yeah, I mean, the excluding postseason is the big factor there because LeBron took him to 5 finals.
We're talking regular season.
Okay. Yes. Now, it was interesting. Kevin Love put out a tweet last night where he kind of ranked the things that he'd seen in his Cavs career. And he talked about LeBron in the postseason. So I'll take that. But he like put Kyrie Irving, he had a 55-point game against Portland and a 57-point game in San Antonio. The 57-point game in San Antonio, which was tied with LeBron for the most in playoff history. That was an iconic Cavs game. He had a 3 at the buzzer to force overtime back when the Spurs were loaded. Like the Spurs were still championship contenders and like nobody went into San Antonio and took the Spurs like that. You know, so I was thinking about this actually as the game was going on. Where does this rank in terms of like, you know, because to take LeBron's name out of a Cavs record book, that doesn't happen every day, right? Yeah. That doesn't happen every day.
What was the previous record? Excuse my ignorance again.
Kyrie and LeBron both had 57.
Okay.
Yeah. And there had been a handful of Cavs who had over 50, including Darius Garland, who had a 50-point game, I think last year, or maybe the year before, but I think last year had a 50-point game. The one thing I will say to qualify this, Garland was out of the game. Evan Mobley was out of the game. Okay. Bulls throwing every, you know, they were starting Lamar Stevens, very good energy player, but not an offensive threat, completely ignoring him, double teaming. And Donovan had been in kind of a slump. So he was pressing too. And so I think, and obviously LeBron had some games where he didn't have exactly great help. But when you factor in all of that stuff, that the Bulls were double teaming him regularly, again, there's been seven guys in history to score 70 points in a game. Seven. And he still had, I think he had 58 in regulation. So I think he already had beaten LeBron's record in regulation with that play. So it's the highest scoring game in 17 years. I mean, I have to say it's Donovan.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm being a prisoner of the moment. It's a January game, so you're all those asterisks, but I think it is.
So you said LeBron and Kyrie have 57, right?
Mm-hmm.
This dude have 55 in the second half.
Wild, right?
Like, think about that.
Spider, he did have an overtime, but I think Kyrie's 57 was an overtime too. I'm pretty sure in San Antonio.
55 in the second. I don't care if it was an extra 5 minutes, man.
Listen, man, the Cavs scored 80 points in the second half and almost lost. And here's something else. Donovan drew 17 fouls in this game.
He could do that.
I mean, you don't get to 71 without getting to the line a few times, right?
Yeah. Like, and here's another thing that's incredible about Donovan Mitchell is I think the average NBA fan thinks he's 6'6".
Mm, yeah.
This dude is like a NFL fullback, right? He's 6'1", man. Like, he's 6'1". Like, think about that.
His like, wingspan might be 6'6".
Yeah. The way he jumps and the way he goes downhill at his size is absolutely incredible. And for him to just is amazing to me. Somebody in the Jazz contingent, who I'll leave nameless, posed a question to me last week because the Jazz came to San Francisco, that the Jazz got the better of the trade for Donovan Mitchell. And I said, whoa, pump your brakes. You know, like, obviously marketing's having a great season. They got some picks out of it and, you know, some good players. There's a reason why they gave up what they gave up for Donovan Mitchell. Like, right. And we saw that on Monday night.
I mean, the fact that he still had 71, to your point, 55 in the second half plus OT. And you knew it was going to. You knew that was their offense then. Like, as you know, no Garland, no Mobley. Okay, it's going to go. And then – in overtime, you still knew exactly where it was going to go, and he still just made it happen. And the fact that we've seen, I think going back, if you use Basketball Reference's game score, I think three of the top 9 or 10 performances that they have all time have all been in the last 3 months.
It's an amazing season. We're having – an amazing season.
The Luka 60-20-10 and the Embiid 59. Like, it's just been a ridiculous year for individual performances.
And then let me tell you guys this, which was incredible to me. I tweeted this last night that, you know, Donovan Mitchell scored or assisted on 99 points.
Yes.
This is the big one.
And only Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game, which accounted with his assist for, I think, 104.
Yeah, he had two assists.
Like, You talk about bringing LeBron's name out. You talk about bringing LeBron's name out. Bringing Wilt's name out is tough too. He brought Wilt's name out, and so to have scored or assisted basically more points than anybody in the last 50 years.
Well, it's the first 70-10. He had 11 assists. It's the 60 first
years. Is that 60 years?
Wilt's game was in 60. Well, it's, you know, whenever you're named with Wilt Chamberlain, it's crazy. But this was Wilt on his best night. This was we're now talking about the 100-point night. We're not talking about Wilt over a season or Wilt over a 12-game stretch or Wilt with a point and rebound total. We're talking about Wilt's number one night, Hershey, PA, against the Knicks, him holding the piece of paper that says 100. That's what we're talking about, Donovan sniffing there. So the first ever – and by the way, I think he had 10 assists in regulation because I think the Cavs scored 15 points in the overtime and he scored 13 of them.
Yeah.
And that's what I wrote about. I wrote a piece on ESPN for today. You know, last summer, Donovan was really upset the way the season ended, not just because the Jazz got beat, not just because they're obviously, you know, rebuilding, didn't think he and Gobert were a fit. He was upset because he's looking around and he's seeing guys that he considers his contemporaries, Tatum, Booker, Trae Young, Ja Morant. These guys are all on the All-NBA team. And he believes, rightly or wrongly, that he's right there with those guys. You know, 2 years ago, when the Jazz had, I think, the number one overall seed, I think that was when what he did, he didn't make the All-NBA team, and it cost him the Rose provision bus, cost him $30 million. That obviously was upsetting for a number of reasons. But, like, I think he believed that he's in that same echelon with those guys, and he was frustrated that, like, here his team was like, we're trading you. We're rebuilding. We don't think that you're all that. And that was one of the things that he went into last year saying, I got to deal with. And so he killed it. And I mean, I know there's been 1,000 stories of summer workouts. For the most part, all of these guys work hard in the summer. You look at the way their games are. You look at their bodies. I mean, there are some guys who aren't working that hard in the summer, but for the most part, the guys are. But Donovan worked harder this last summer than he had previously in his career. I detailed it in this story. After the Gobert trade, he was going to go work out with the Jazz in Vegas. He canceled that, said, I'm not going to work out with the Jazz. I'm not going to be with the Jazz much longer. He went to Miami and spent 2 months there working out like a beast. And I wrote about some of the sprints that he did. And the reason I wrote about that last night was because I'm watching this game in the fourth quarter and overtime, and he is operating at a different level. He has just got more energy. The Bulls was a very frustrating game for the Bulls. They were frustrated at the officials. You know, DeMar DeRozan, it was a home and home with the Cavs and Bulls. They played the Bulls, I think it was on New Year's Eve, but it may have been the 30th. But the previous game was in Chicago. The Cavs won by one. DeRozan had a shot at the end. The Bulls thought he got fouled. I can't remember if the last 2 minute report said he got fouled. But they were frustrated from that game. They, by the way, Garland and Mobley missed that game too. Not a good performance from the Bulls, who are now 5 games under .500, to lose both of those games with the Cavs missing two of their 4 best players. We'll put that aside for a second. But the Bulls were frustrated, but Donovan is just, they're all sort of nailed to the floor. There were numerous baskets in the fourth quarter and overtime where he just was moving faster than they were. And so, like, now he would be the first to tell you that he didn't put all that work in the summer to outlast a team in January. That only really matters if he's outlasting teams in April and May. And that's where his season will be defined. But I will tell you that on this night in January, he was the most fit guy on the floor. And he's like first or second or third or something in the league in minutes. He's averaging the highest scoring of his career, shooting the best percentages on twos, threes, and at the free throw line, and playing the most minutes and taking the same amount of shots. Like it's not like he's shooting a lot more. He's being more efficient. And so he came into this season. Yeah, he wanted to, you know, play well and he wants his team to win. But he came into this season trying to say, listen, I am not a guy that was jettisoned. I'm not a guy who isn't on the same level as the other dudes. Now, whether or not he'll get there, Spears,
yeah,
that's yet to be seen. But that's what he's doing right now. That's what this motivation is driving him.
And I'm curious about, you know, how the Cavs continue to progress, because they've had some roller coaster this season already. Mobley's ankle is concerning. It continues to be an issue. Hopefully he'll get better. Maybe they just need to leave him out an extended period of time to get right. But this Cavs team, man, when they're fully healthy, come playoff time, they'll be interesting. They'll be a hard out. I don't think this is I'm not excited about their bench, but they're a fun and up-and-coming team, and this is the first team since LeBron left where I think Cavs fans could, like, you'll never forget about LeBron, but at least you feel like this is the next generation. This is right. This is new. This is something to be excited about for the future. And Donovan Mitchell is a big part of that.
Yeah.
And Brian, what's the vibe like there now? Have you been to a game?
I haven't been to a game recently. No, by the way, Jackson, our producer, looked it up. Donovan's wingspan is 6'10", which is like, whoa.
You can get by at 6'1" if you got a 6'10" wingspan.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
By the way, he's getting by. He's been getting by.
Let me just be, yeah.
So what he has, he has a 1XLTT t-shirts, right? Like,
he's definitely got some extra length in there. Definitely got to go see a guy for his
suits. Like Kawhi. Kawhi can Kawhi can scratch his knee without bending over. Like, yeah. Donovan is like, oh, I got a scratch on my knee. I just
tie his shoes.
Yeah. The thing about it is, the Cavs got off to a really good start and they've kind of played like choppy 500-ish basketball for the last like month, 5-6 weeks. And they've had some injuries. You know, Garland has been in and out of, I think he said, 3 different injuries this year. And Garland's numbers are down, and he, is coming off an all-star season. He's had moments. He struggled a little bit playing alongside Mitchell, and he had just begun to get a little traction. The last 6 games he played alongside Mitchell, he was averaging 23 points, 8 assists, and shooting 57% from the field. And then last week in Indiana, he hurt his hand. And now he's back down. He's missed the last couple of games. I'm not 100% sure what the prognosis is. And so he's just getting going. And so teams have been doubling Donovan, and he'd actually been in a little bit of a slump. And Evan Mobley is, in my view, having a good year, but it's not an explosive leap forward. And so people are a little bit frustrated with that. To me, I keep saying to people in Cleveland, if this team finishes anywhere in the top 6 and makes the playoffs without the play-in, it's a great season. I've said this 10 times over. I'll say it 20 times more, because they have not made the playoffs since 98 without LeBron. Anything making the playoffs, they feel like should be, I feel like should be a real accomplishment. But they've been the number one defense for a big chunk of the year. They've been the number one net rating team for a big chunk of the year. And they were third for like weeks. And it was like Celtics, Heat. I'm sorry, Celtics, Bucks, and then the Cavs were third. Well, the Nets have caught fire, the Sixers have caught fire, and the Cavs have played choppy. And so now all of a sudden they're slipping down. There's some frustration. I'm like, no, that's how why this is tough. You should expect this. But there's been some like, is this all there is in Cleveland, especially with their lack of wing play? But that will get put on the back burner, at least for right now, in the wake of this Donovan. They are hoping, I think, to get those guys back soon. Kevin Love also, he has a fracture in his thumb and he's playing through it. And he's actually played better the last couple of games, but for like two weeks, he hadn't played well. So their bench production has really fallen off. So we'll see. But Spears, I do want to talk about the other incredible performance, other overtime incredible. Well, there was a couple because Embiid had a great game too. LeBron had a great game. By the way,
it was a great night of NBA basketball, man. A very memorable night.
Yeah, we needed the distraction from the unfortunate events in Buffalo. Yeah. I hope we have positive news by the time this pod comes out. By the way, just real quick before we talk about the Warriors, Spears. LeBron just finished a 5-game road trip. I'm going to tell you what his stats are. Now, I would argue that this is one of the best long road trips LeBron's had in his career, at least statistically. The Lakers went 3-2 on it, and no one is excited about the Lakers right now. They had a 6-game road trip in December and a 5-game road trip in December. And in those 11 games, they went 6-5. And I believe that Anthony Davis missed 7 of them. And, you know, once they went out, once he went out, they lost those games at home, and those, they went on another trip where I think they got beat. So like, nobody's happy about it, but like, I think they kept their heads above water remarkably. And I've been as critical of Lakers as anybody. Let me tell you what LeBron just went on this 5-game road trip. He averaged 37 points in 36 minutes. He shot 59% from the field. Don't ask from three-point range. He probably shouldn't be taking as many three-pointers, having the one of the worst three-point shooting seasons of his career, but we'll move past that. He shot 85% at the line, which, as you know, LeBron in his later years has been getting worse at the line. So he's on 9 attempts a game. He's getting to the line 9 times a game, 85%. That's as good as you're ever going to see from him in a stretch like that. He averaged 7 rebounds and 6 assists in that 5 games without Anthony Davis. Like, you know, they're relying on, you know, they're getting like 35 minutes a night from Dennis Schroeder in this stretch. And Lonnie Walker has also been hurt. Lonnie Walker has been one of their key, like one of the guys that's helped them. He was hurt on this road trip. And when he did play, he didn't play well. So let me just say, take a quick moment to acknowledge LeBron. Now, the Warriors last night, Spears.
Wait. Let's stop here, because we gotta. We talked about Wilt. We talked about LeBron, and LeBron James, to his credit, like, he got in Michael Jordan territory last night too. With some of the things, he's the first player to record consecutive 30-point games at 38 or older since Jordan in February 2003. Right.
He's only been 38 for a week.
Yeah, the oldest player in NBA
history. He started 38 off right.
Yeah, the oldest player in NBA history record consecutive 35-point double-doubles. Like, there have been 3 instances of a player at age 38 or older to record 40, 10, and 5 in a game. It's LeBron, and 2 of them were LeBron in the last week. The other was Michael Jordan on December 31st, 2001. And then he's also scored at least 10 points on 50% shooting in 12 straight halves. Like, quietly, and I know you don't talk Lakers much on here because they're always talked about. I'm looking at this right now. The Lakers are, like, the Western Conference is a really weird place. It's like everybody's, it's like a battle royal, those old battle royals used to watch on WWF in the 80s, man. And all these dudes are, like, beating each other up and trying to throw each other out of the ring. But...
You're talking Junkyard Dog. Snuka, you're talking George the Animal Steel. You're talking Jake the Snake Roberts. Come on, man.
Exactly. Good television for a youngster, right?
Great television. Loved it.
But the
Randy
Jazz.
Savage.
Yeah, the Jazz, I think, are going to continue to drop. Minnesota.
If they're smart, they will.
Yeah, I think they're going to make some trades. But dare I say, the Lakers are slowly creeping up to playing territory. A lot of basketball left. So LeBron keeps playing like this. AD comes back. there could be some Lakers playoff basketball. Look,
it's a miracle the Lakers are still in this thing. And it sounded like they thought there was a chance AD might be out for the year and that maybe he avoided that.
Yeah.
Although I still don't exactly know.
And this is a team that hasn't won a game in their division yet. They're 0-7 in the Pacific. But they're they're right now, they're two games out of the tenth spot.
Yeah, in the loss column, they're one, you know, in the loss column, they're one game behind the Jazz in 10th. Now they have three fewer wins, but you know, you look at the loss column because you can you know, that's where you can theoretically control your destiny. So in the loss column, the Jazz have 20 losses, Lakers have 21. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
There has been some amazing NBA performances over the last week that because of football have been like not, haven't got the respect that it deserves.
Absolutely. Because
this is the height of like the college football season and potential NBA playoff matchups and stuff like that. Like, there's been some amazing NBA things. Like, we could probably rattle off, like, whether it's Luka or LeBron or Clay or Donovan or Embiid or Luke or Joker, like, just outstanding basketball, right?
But yeah, anyway, last week, I mean, Embiid, I mean, just. I watched CJ set a Pels record for threes in a game. He's coming around. I mean, it's a very good time to be a basketball fan.
Yeah. But going to Clay, every time you start to think that Clay Thompson is done, like he pulls something out of his hat like this. You know what I mean? Like his shooter shoot, right? Like, yeah. And his shot.
He shoots, man. He shoots.
He is not shy. He is definitely not shy, but once a month, he reminds you who he is, that he is Klay Thompson. And, you know, there's missed back-to-backs, and there's some kind of ebbs and flows because some may say it's his injury or some may say it's age or whatever, but then he puts this performance on you. And, like, I'm going to give the Warriors some credit too, man. Like, they just came off of awful road trip out east, and Draymond expressed concerns about where the team was mentally.
Yeah, that was actually kind of a sort of a chilling statement when he said that.
Yeah. And then they come home, and if they could somehow figure out a way to move all their games to Chase Center, they'd be amazing.
Yeah. Like, well, this was a let's be honest real quick. This was a bad loss for the Hawks.
Oh, super bad.
Bad loss.
The Warriors have gotten several lucky breaks. Like, they haven't been blowing teams out on this homestand. They've had several good bounces of the ball. And that game Monday night, that overtime win or double overtime win, and even a loony tipping at the end, and the way, like, Poole gets his shot blocked, and then it, like, flows over to, you know what I mean, for three. And it's just – they've had some crazy victories.
Will that be the only walk-off make of Looney's career? I feel like we're not going to see a lot of Kevon Looney walk-off wins. just to highlight the one-off nature of that.
Yeah, Looney's one of those guys. The Warriors might retire his jersey one day.
Jersey retirements are all over the board. There's some jersey retirement standards that are preposterous.
He's the Warriors version of Haslam. Just a guy that he had some bad injuries early in his career. He's actually being a great mentor for Wiseman right now, like letting him know. Like I remember Todd Ramassar, his agent, said, if Looney didn't have that hip injury, he'd be an all-star. I didn't see him play enough in college to know how great he was before he had this hip injury, but he fought through that, stuck around, went to the G League, came back, and it's just, he's still on that Warriors roster. He's been there for a while and just quietly been that rock, man. He's also helped a lot through the Draymond Poole situation, getting kind of guys. He's just like this quiet E.F. Hutton, when he talks, people listen kind of guy.
Nice.
We're Lopez is like, what are these guys talking about, man? But he, you know.
He referenced English Muffin and E.F. Hutton in the same pod, Lopez.
It's very impressive.
But Loon is, he's a legend out here, and people just love him because he just plays and you never hear anything from him. And so I think their players were super excited about that performance. But like Clay's out. I thought Wiggins was coming back on Monday. Wiggins is out. Like for the Warriors to like right the ship without those two guys, it's pretty impressive. And I'm starting to feel like they're like Dante DiVincenzo has been great. Like their bench is starting to come around. These young guys are starting to come around. Kuminga got hurt, which is concerning. Wiseman's gotten hurt, but before that, like the young guys were finally able to show up, and this team is, you know, starting to show some grit, man.
So in this 5-game win streak that they're on, which is a absolute godsend for what they needed, as Draymond referenced for their mentality. Yeah. But by the way, it helps in the standings too, because, you know, we were talking about the Lakers kind of being able to spin their wheels and stay put. Golden State's been able to, you know, get a foothold and not lose too much ground here. They crawled, you know, Steve Kerr, when they came back from that East Coast trip, they were 3 games under 500, and looking at that 3-16 road record and going, geez. And Steve Kerr said, look, I don't remember what they were. Let's see. I'll figure it out. They were 15-18, you know, and Kerr was like, this is who we are. This is what we are. We are what our record says. So they've crawled back over 500. Now I'm going to say something about this winning streak. Their offense in this streak, and not surprisingly, when they're missing Curry and Wiggins, because Wiggins is a scorer. He's a pure scorer. It hasn't been what he's done always since he's been with the Warriors, but when you need him to, Wiggins can score. This is a guy who's averaged over 20, when averaging over 20 was something in this league. Now, you know, people fall, you know, off the bench and average 20, but, you know, so they haven't had their two guys who can really put it up. And we know Clay's been up and down. They've been the 23rd ranked offense on their home court in the league during this 5-game win streak. Okay. That doesn't bode well, but you know, their defense has been a problem all year long. And it bothered Kerr in early November. He was sounding the alarm before the injuries, you know, dog them. The reason their record is so trash on the road is because they cannot defend. Well, they are defending, guys. It's a 5-game stretch. It doesn't mean anything, but they are second in defense in their 5-game win streak. By the way, the team who's number one in defense in that 5-game stretch, we almost never talk about them, the Washington Wizards, last 5 games, they're on a 5-game win streak, which started on the West Coast, which I didn't foresee happening, with Bradley Beal out. They've been defending really well, but we'll talk about them in a different pod Lopez, this team has been defending. And that is why they've been able to get a couple of wins here. Very badly needed wins.
When you don't have Steph, and I'm not trying to say that they're a better defending team right now because Steph is out. I'm trying to say it helps to focus things on where you need to lock in at. Right. So when you're missing your guy, okay, what can we do to make up for that? And I think it's finally starting to click that this is where we can do it. You know, it's the Warriors who are just going to outscore everybody every night and it's going to be fine. That seems to be gone, as Steve Kerr has said, but they have to lock in on the other end. And you're starting to see that kind of start to take shape. Now, can they build on this? That's what we're going to see. Obviously it helps if Clay's, you know, having 50 point nights and things like that. But, It helps you kind of focus in. And I think sometimes when a star player does go out, other guys get to step up and then build on that when the star player returns. All right. I've watched that here in New Orleans throughout this year because it feels like somebody's always out so far through almost halfway in the season. But I think that's where you're seeing the change. Again, not because Steph is out, because like, oh, no, they're better with no. It's let's focus on these other things while we're waiting for him to get back.
And the Warriors had six players out total. Part of the reason why I think their defense has even improved is because they've been putting like Kuminga on like guards, which has been a great move. He gave Ja Morant some troubles on Christmas Day. But, you know, the Warriors also have two-way guys that, like Ty Jerome and Anthony Lamb.
Yeah.
They've been really good, man. And so they have one roster spot open. Iguodala did start practicing with the G League team, so maybe he joins soon. But I'm guessing that Lamb's going to end up making this team if they don't use that roster spot.
He's a versatile defender. He's got good size. He's a good shooter. They need something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so Jamichael Green has just been hurt. When he has been healthy, there hasn't been a lot of consistency. So I wonder if they might even prefer Lamb over Green. I think Lamb had passed him in the rotation as it was anyways. But Anthony Lamb played like two games last season, I believe, for the Rockets. Or no, San Antonio. Two games. And now this dude is averaging like 6 points for the Warriors. Last 10 games, he averaged 7.5, like, comes in, drops some threes, and they got confidence in him. You'd think he'd been in the league for a while. But he's made himself into an NBA player for sure.
Winning is an everyday mindset. And on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Yeah, that's the thing about the Warriors. You know, their payroll is insane. So they just, you know, every maneuver has to be paid attention to because they're in the repeater tax and they're so deep in that like every dollar they spend costs them like $7. I don't know. I don't think it's quite that, but it's something in the neighborhood of that. So they left the 15th roster spot open, and then they used the spot on Iguodala, who hasn't played. So they're kind of playing with a roster of 13 on a good day.
And then remember also on a Iguodala contract, I don't have what he made in front of me. I'm guessing it's the minimum, right? But the league pays half of that because he's been in the league for 10 years.
Right. They pay a portion of it. Right.
So there is some relief there.
Right. But it's, you know, part of the reason that they've left the roster spot open is that it's financially related. They're trying to, trying to protect themselves. Before we go, I do want to talk about the Pelicans, Lopez. Zion had 26 points in 28 minutes Monday night. What did Embiid finish with? 43?
I think so. And 12, or it was something like that. That's
okay. They were both going for 40.
Yeah, 42 and 11. Yeah.
They were both going for 40 in that game, I think. Zion just had his first 40-point game, right? Like a week and a half ago or so?
Yeah. And then immediately followed up with 36 against the 76ers in the same game that CJ scored 42. Whenever McCollum, Philly took
team
out
– team record on threes, right?
Team record 11 threes, broke Peja Stojakovic's record back when they were the Hornets. But Zion saw something in those games. Whenever they took Embiid out, Willie Green did this. This was part of their strategy. If Embiid sat and they brought Montrez in and PJ sat, they just gave Z and said, just go attack. I think both times it really happened in the third quarter where he started to take off. But when they played last, December 30th, that was, he was 13 of 19, got to the line 16 times. He was just a monster in the second half, which helped since CJ was able to, hit so many threes in the first half. This was shaping up to be one of those nights again. Very big third quarter. He was going to rest for a few minutes. And he was 10 of 12. He was not missing much. And I think it was going to be kind of the same thing. We're going to see a very good fourth quarter duel between those two. But end of the third quarter, Zion looks like he pulls a hamstring. They rule him out with the right hamstring strain, and he does not return to that game.
Yeah, so we're waiting on either he's having an MRI today. By the time this pod comes out, I'm sure you'll have reported. But it's obviously whenever Zion gets an injury like that, that they're going to be cautious.
Right.
So now Zion has been playing great, but my concern here is Brandon Ingram is still not back. Now he's missed what, like 15 games?
I think it's probably up to 18 now with the toe.
Okay.
He has started his ramp up again. I don't want to say he could be back in the next week or so and then something happened again, but we have started to see him do the things that he was ramping up to do prior to when he tried to come back the first time. So timeline on Brandon, he originally hurt the toe, kicked the back of somebody's heel in the Memphis game. That was November 25th. Originally missed, it looked like he was going to miss six games or so. They were going to try to get him back. It looked like for the December 11th game against Phoenix. Something happened in the ramp up to that game. Re-injured it. They kind of shut him down for a couple weeks, and now they're back to where, okay, he's doing his pregame stuff. He's starting to take steps to get back on the floor. Would hope you would see him in the next, 7 to 10 days if all goes according to plan this time.
Yeah, the Pelicans, obviously, they were leading the West, 10 days ago. Still in great position. They're one game back, as we sit here today, right, of Denver, and half game back of Memphis. But they've kind of leveled off. They've lost a couple in a row. They kind of lost their mojo a little bit. And I think Zion is putting up great numbers. CJ has been in a basically a shooting slump for a lot of the year. He's was breaking out of it a little bit, but they're sort of limping along without their, you know, their stud scorer. I mean, Zion, I guess you would say, is their franchise player, but like Ingram is so valuable and creates such a safety net. You know, they're doing fine, but like they're now facing, and let's just be honest, even if it's a mild hamstring injury, Zion will miss games probably. So, you know, the Pelicans are a little bit of a nervy stage at this point.
I think what's helping right now is, I'm sorry, CJ's actually his last 10, obviously a 42 point game helps, but his last 10, he's shooting 20. I'm sorry, he's averaging 26 points a game. I think he's shooting 50 from three over that stretch. CJ got sick early in the season with like a normal sickness, but it kind of zapped his energy a little bit. Comes back for a game or two, then catches COVID.
Yeah, he came on this pod and got COVID, which is just totally typical of what this pod has done to people.
I'm going to have to go take a test when I finish this pod, I guess. So, but it took him a while to get his legs back under him. And the last 10, 11, 12 games, he's kind of started to find himself. He's looking like the guy who they traded for and was so great at the end of last year. I know Mark can speak to some of the things that CJ's been doing to try and get back, but he's starting to find himself. But they really, especially if Z is going to miss some time here with the hamstring, are looking to have, you know, BI get back, you know, sooner rather than later.
And you got to give like CJ credit for kind of like basically in a lot of ways keeping the fort together through all this. Like, if you would have told me that Zion and BI would have missed this many games and the team would have had the record that they've had, I'd be stunned. I mean, Willie Green is a phenomenal coach, man. Let's give him his flowers. But like CJ's had in the last month span or even less than that, probably in the last 3 weeks, he's had over 25, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, six, seven times, including a 40 piece and a 42 piece. Like, that's not really how you think of his game, but he reminds you, man, like, you know, I could score with the best of them if I need to. And
let me pull up his stats. I didn't have that quite ready. Again, right now, scoring average and 20 in the NBA isn't getting you as much attention as it has for the last 25 years because everybody and their brother is averaging 30. Yeah. But this guy, these are his last 9 seasons, okay? 21, 23, 21, 21, 22, 23, 22. Last year, let me figure what the combined was.
It was 22 last year combined, but 24-3 with New Orleans.
Right.
Yeah.
And this year, guess what? He's just creeped to 20. He's at 20. So, like, the dude's going to give you 20.
Yeah,
you know, and he can score. He's
you know
still
how many
shooting.
Points he has for his career now?
Well,
12,000 on the nose.
Wow.
Huh.
Seems like it would be more, to be honest with you. But he's still young. But I mean, the guy does a lot of things. But one thing CJ McCollum is going to do, he's going to score because he has scored for a long time, and so
and get you know, it from I know, his brother. Like, his brother Eric still scoring out there overseas, man. That's what they do. They get buckets.
He was when we did the crossover pod a few weeks ago. He was sort of mired in the slump then. He was like, "Look, I know I put the work in. I know what's going to happen. I got my 10,000 hours, probably 20,000 hours. I know that it's going to be okay." And you know, maybe he's giving himself a pep talk, but he's also, you know, he's saying that for a reason. But look, he may need to keep doing this because, you know, they may be down without their scores here. I don't know what their schedule's like coming up, Andrew, but that was disappointing news to hear that Zion had to come out because he's been so great.
Andrew, is there anyone that we're missing that deserve some credit too?
Well, I will say this. These last two, so they won seven in a row. That was kind of the ones when they beat the two Phoenix games as homes. Herb Jones has been out for a little bit. Larry Nance has missed the last two games. He's very big to what they do defensively. So they're trying to piece a lot of different things together. Jonas Valanciunas has kind of been steady, and he's had some better games as of late, even though maybe sometimes he's playing 20 to 25 minutes a night. Najee Marshall has come in. They call him the knife now. Because I think they're talking about him being like, who's the Swiss Army knife? But like, all right, if so-and-so is a Swiss Army knife, then what's Najee? And he's like, Najee's just a knife. He's just a guy. He's just a cutter. He's going to get through. He's going to do
That's a hell of a nickname, the knife.
So Najee's getting in there. He's having good stuff. Obviously, Trey didn't expect to be a starter this year. He was kind of going to be the sixth man. He's had to come in. Trey Murphy the third. He's been shooting it very well. So they've gotten a lot of contributions from a lot of different guys. So much so that Jackson Hayes, who hardly played at all through the first 2 months of the season, he's been getting regular rotation minutes. And with people getting healthy, he's been playing normal minutes here in the last seven games. So you're starting to realize that even their 12th, 13th, 14th guy can come in and play regular rotation minutes. And fellas, I'm going to tell you, not something that's always happened with the good old New Orleans Pelicans when you've had depth, where number 12, 13, 14 can come and give you regular minutes and you'd be just fine with that. So the depth is here. To Mark's point, you mentioned Willie Green. He deserves a lot of credit for what he's been able to do in year two. I think he's learned a lot about himself, and the fact that they are still a game out of first place with, CJ missing some time and being sick with COVID, Z missing a couple of game stretches here and there, Brandon missing 18 or 19 games, and the fact that they're still, third in the West and a game out of first is speaks to the depth and speaks to Willie Green.
Every time I see Najee Marshall, man, I think of the Goody Mob. I know Brian's familiar with that group, but I'm like, he could be in the Goody Mob.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Najee is just a fun guy. Najee and Jose are just always together.
He's gotten better too.
Oh yeah.
By the way, GTA is a better nickname than the knife, but the knife is good.
Yeah, the knife.
GTA. He got Harden or he got Maxey the other night with a GTA, and then got the GTA charge, the version of the GTA, getting right in front of James as he got the ball and Harden pushed off. Jose went flying to the free throw line, got the charge.
Who gave him that nickname?
That was something that happened while he was at Georgia Tech. They started the Grand Theft Alvarado, and I think we've now just kind of adapted that to calling that the steal itself. And then it just kind of, has stuck as a nickname for him.
Oh, man.
That's a great nickname.
I had so much – I know you were at that part. I had so much fun covering that Pelicans-Suns series last year. You remember the way it finished with the T-shirts?
Yes.
FJ Crowder
shirts. Yes.
One of Jay Crowder's last games as a Sun, as it turned out.
But, right.
But, GTA and CP3, how about that? That whole thing developing. I love that.
If that person's playing.
That person. Oh, my God. I love talking trash to CP. I love it.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's great. The New Orleans tradition that I find to this day very, very odd is the whole king cake thing.
Hey, man. I went looking for king cake coffee a couple weeks ago.
Yes, you did.
I know you told me about that, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the concept of the cake where there's a figurine inside of it.
Legend.
And you're looking to get it in your piece.
It's a baby.
Well, whatever it is.
And you want the baby.
I understand that. It's strange.
Unless I got to buy the next king cake, I did not want the baby.
Andrew ever choked on the baby?
Not that I know of. I have bitten into a few king cakes and had to pull out the baby. But
because if you get that good one, it Randazzo is not the best now. What is the Vietnamese place that makes them?
Dong Phong. I'm personal. I have a I like Haydel's. It's right by the house.
Haydel's is good.
Yeah. All this starts in 3 days, Brian. It's gonna be.
I'm just saying, like, Brian, you just made the statement. Man. I've had times where I've, you know, had to.
Had to pull out, yeah, I've had to pull out that a toy figurine baby out of my mouth. Yeah. 100%.
And it's not just
clean cake off
roll.
Of it. Yeah.
It's just. It's not just cinnamon roll. So, I want to hear somebody say that's just a cinnamon roll. No.
So good.
The icing.
I cannot wait.
Unfortunately, I'm an icing person. Icing is important.
Very much an icing guy. Do not just like sprinkles and sugar. Gotta have icing.
Brian, I found this place that is amazing in New Orleans. It's the only kind of place you find it in New Orleans. And I just recently discovered it. Bakery Bar. Have you been there?
Have not been there.
It's a bar that has dessert. And they sell cake and spirits and wine and beer. And that's it.
Next time you come and it's not 22 degrees
outside. It's right outside. Bakery Bar. It's an outstanding concept. It's you know, unless you have a sugar issue, they should franchise these things, Brian. Brian, if we're there in the playoffs.
You should bring Spears, bring it to Oakland, man. Bring it to the Bay Area. You can do it.
Bakery Bar. It's a bakery and a bar. That's an amazing concept, man. I'm saying, anybody goes to New Orleans, man, Bakery Bar is your spot. I had a piece of confetti.
Go to English Muffins, then go to Bakery Bar.
Yeah.
Oh, they got Dough Bears.
Don't
cakes.
Crack your tooth on the baby. Jeez.
And the cakes there they have, Brian. These are like, you could get birthday cake.
Oh my God. All right, can we wrap this pot up? I'm gonna go right now.
All I know is Andrew found a place for me in Milwaukee. The way you're talking about this place in
Bakery
Orleans, you know,
bar.
Anybody who spends any time with me knows that I like chicken parmesan. Okay.
Yeah,
I've eaten it all over the country. You can't eat all over the world because we invented it in the United States, but I've eaten it all over the country. Andrew found a pizza place in Milwaukee that serves chicken parm pizza.
Brick Three Pizza.
And
chicken parm pizza.
Yeah, oh, and like, by the way, like you say, oh, that's just
delicious.
That's just
no, I'm not hating on it. I'm just
delicious.
Somehow it tastes,
and I'm
exactly
trying to figure
like
out
it.
How it's made.
All right, thank you for listening to the Hoop Collective podcast. Thank you to Jackson and Bruce, our producers. Thank you to Spears and Lopez. We'll be back on Friday with the Timbs. Who knows who's going to score 40 between now and then? We'll talk to you soon.
Should have known better than put two New Orleans kids on the pod.
Bakery.bar.
You going, huh? You going.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.